The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
That's right. A little bit of Wizards of Winter for you right here on Radio Memphis. You are tuned in to Radio Memphis Around the World with me, D. And I know it is Memorial Day weekend, but we felt the spirit of Christmas right here because we want to definitely get in the mood. And for those of you tuned in, you guys remember that the Wizards of Winter is a former Artist of the Month for us right here on Radio Memphis Around the World. And Spirit of Christmas is actually off their second album, Magic of Winter. And the Magic of Winter was written by Scott Kelly, Fred Gorhaw, Sharon Kelly, and Steve Ratchin, all right? And of course, this was an album that got 8.5 stars out of 10 on Brave Words. And, you know, they had such a high accolade for this particular album or for this particular group that even when they talked about this particular song that you just heard, The Spirit of Christmas, they tell you that Guy Lemonnier, he actually absolutely came up with the perfect holiday song that stops you in your tracks. You know, how about that? All right. Now, as I promised, you know, I told you guys that I was able to catch up with the singer, the lead vocalist. And a lot of people, you know, may not realize, you know, Guy, he's a New York-based actor and singer. He's originally from Michigan, and he is actually also, and a lot of people may or may not realize, is that he's an original founding member of Trans-Siberian Orchestra. He performed and toured professionally with TSO for several years, you know, and of course, he can actually be heard on their album, Beethoven's Last Night. Now, as an actor, he's appeared in roles on the TV hit shows like Gotham, Quantico, Broad City, and Power. He's also, I mean, this guy's track record keeps going. It's fantastic. He's also performed in scores of shows on and off Broadway, and even including holding starring roles in Jesus Christ Superstar, Jekyll and Hyde, as well as Dracula the Musical. And, you know, if that's not enough, he does a lot of stuff, obviously, during the holiday season. He is a member of the progressive rock holiday music group, of course, the Wizards of Winter, and he even is able to incorporate some of the Christmas pop group, the Kings of Christmas, in with that. And so, you know, that being a mouthful in and of itself, one of the things that I really kind of figured out is that I wanted to stop down and I wanted to talk to him because he's got all of these different things as far as his entertainment, you know, and as far as music and media and stuff that he juggles. And what better and what cooler guy that, you know, we need to talk to. And as a matter of fact, I happen to have Guy on the phone with me live right now. How are you doing, honey?
Hey, darling. How you doing?
I am great. I'm so glad that we finally got the opportunity to do this.
You made me sound so good.
I shortened it. I shortened that, man. I was like, if I wrote down, if I talked about everything I knew that you really truly did, it was going to take 20 minutes before I could get you on, man. And that's cutting in our time. No. Thank you, honey. And those of you who've tuned in, say your last name properly for me. Because I've been butchering it
Lemonnier.
That's such a rock star name, and that's cool. Guy Lemonnier. All right.
Or say it. Why would I come up with that for a stage name?
Well, okay, so you come by it honestly. Those of you who've tuned in, we're hanging out with Guy. And you know, it's funny. One of the reasons, you know, that I really wanted to kind of sit down and take this chance on Radio Memphis Around the World to chat with you is really, you know, because of all the things that you've done, but you balance on so many different levels and so many different areas, you know, as far as, you know, music, as theater, you know, TV and stuff. And it's how do you keep everything in place? How do you keep everything in its lane?
tell me about it. Stay in your lane, right? It's schizophrenic, I'll be honest.
Well, I figured as much.
It's all over the place. First of all, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here, of course.
Thank you.
It's a busy life. When you pursue, when you at conception decide to pursue the arts in general or, you know, music, acting, any of these venues, it's a road. It's a long road, you know, and you have to be in it for the long haul. And, you know, in my later years, I should say, you really put that to the test, you know, you really put it to the test. And a lot of people fall out the older they get.
Right.
Because it's a hard road. It's a struggle, you know, but not without its rewards.
So, well, you've done a lot. Now, taking everybody kind of, you know, in everybody's mind, because everybody's, you know, sitting back and everybody's relaxed. And you know, by the way, I've gotten such a huge response, like, in the past 24 hours, and everybody found out that you're going to be on air. You know, you've got a lot of, like, friends and everybody that's ever like, dude, I want to join in. I think even Steve Ratchet even like shared it. It's like, hey, I know that dude. I'm like, yeah, I think you might.
Oh, you guys. my wizard family.
Right. You know, one of the things that you know, to kind of put it into perspective, you know, a lot of people, all these cool, you know, crazy cool things that I was able to kind of read off about, you know, basically your resume. A lot of people don't understand and don't know that in the beginning, you know, when you were really, really kind of doing this, you know, all the time that it took, you know, you beating the pavement and you know, and getting out there and, you know, and doing auditions, you know, and things like that. One of my first questions is that, you know, I saw in all of the stuff that you did that you had such a strong, you know, backstory as far as with theater and music theater, you know, and it was,
right,
was there a reason for that?
I bookended things. It's, theater was the start, of course. And plays were the start. The very first play I ever did was 1984.
Oh, wow.
Nice, happy one. You know, a real nice, happy George Orwell play.
That's deep.
And it really, it tested my emotional capacity and the output of that. And I was good at it. And it fit. It was a good fit. And then I was in my French class, my second year of French class, go figure. The choir director came by. I was singing in gym class with a girl that I was in gym class with. And she noticed that I could sing, you know, so.
Oh, okay.
And, next thing I know, the choir director shows up in my French class and pulls me out of French class. And I'm like, no, you know. But he had me sing Amazing Grace, and that was the start of it from there. Mr. David Diven got me into the whole thing. So
wow.
From there on out, it became musical theater.
Wow. All of that because you were impressing a girl. That's cool. No, because that's how I'm putting it out there, man. That's cool. No, that's very cool. And so I think what I really appreciate about this whole moment, Guy, is that there was a teacher that just heard you. And I mean, they just heard you and they were like, oh yeah, that's it. We're snatching him up.
It was, and it was nice. It was foreign and it was strange, surreal, but also very nice to be accepted, especially in high school, you know. I had an afro and zits and, you know, profile glasses in high school. So, you know, it was nice to be accepted into a group.
So you actually got, you actually found friends. Okay. So.
Yeah, I'm up on that now, but, you know, it's nice to be accepted into a group. And I found that I excelled in that, of course. It was a natural fit for me. I knew my mother always had an incredible voice. She never really had the chance to pursue anything along those lines. So
wow.
I knew that she was always a phenomenal singer with a beautiful voice, and I never really thought twice about it for myself, to be honest. So it was unearthed that way, and the rest is history. So soon to be.
soon to be. So you wind up, okay, so you wind up getting through this, you know, as far as, you know, through school and stuff, you know, and you get out of school. And ultimately, you know, once you've gotten out of high school and stuff, you decide, okay, this is something you want to further and go on with, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Well, and I always enjoyed acting in general, but I knew that I was good enough for musical theater that I could try to pursue that, and I could maybe make headway in that business. You know,
right.
Being a realist, I knew it was going to be a hard road, and I thought that maybe I could excel in that area. So, you know, it was. I went to New York at 18 with a group of friends, kind of mentors in my community from Michigan.
Right.
And I went to New York and I walked around and stared up the sky and all buildings and the culture and the energy and the life, and I said, I'll be back. And I was about 2 years later, I was back, and I never left. So,
and that's it, and that's where, and that's pretty much what you've got going on. So now you're working
the
scene, you know, as far as in New York and stuff, and that's, you know, that's a grind. That's a deal, you know, and you're doing all of these auditions, you're trying to get in all of these plays, you're trying to do all this stuff, off Broadway stuff, you know, and right. You know, and you wind up, you know, getting a couple of parts, you know, here and there, and you know, mm-hmm. So 99 rolls around, and you actually wind up, you know, you're sick. Okay, you have a raspy voice.
You know all the stories. Don't you?
You just look, man. If you understand what I do, yes, I dig and stuff. And I'm gonna be like, you know, I'm gonna bring out the really good stuff. You wind up in it, and you go ahead and you actually, you know, take an audition, and you wind up, you know, a very, very specific audition. You want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, it was a nighttime audition, which was strange to begin with. And it was at SIR Studios, which is a nice, prolific studio in New York City, as you probably know.
Sure.
And I was sick as a dog at the time. And, you know, it's tough to be a self-motivator when you're in this business and keep the fire lit. And I think that makes or breaks many a performer, is your tenacity and your will to get back up again, no matter how many times you're knocked down. You know,
right.
Not to be cliche, but it ain't about how many times you get knocked down, but about how fast you get back up again.
Absolutely.
So at this point, I was down. I knew I needed to get out there. I showed up at 7 o'clock, and there in the room is Mr. Paul O'Neill and Mr. Bob Kinkle. And I was at the very end of the day.
Wow.
They had apparently seen about 2,000 singers over the course of the week. And it was kismet. It was magic.
Wow.
And I sang a few tunes for them. They gave me, I've always been good at learning by rote in the moment on the spot, cold reading. And so they gave me a couple of tunes, pointed them out a couple of times, and we went through them. And it was a success. It was a raging success.
Wow.
So they talked about this little tour that they're starting called the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and that they'll be going out on the road. So, of course, I was thrilled. I had no idea what it was or what was to come.
Well, sure.
However, I knew that the buzz had begun in New York City already at that point. So
I gotcha.
Once I booked that job, I was hearing from a lot of my musical theater friends about how they get in on that gig.
And they wanted to know what you did, right?
Yeah, exactly. They took really good care of us on that job. It's the closest to a rock star I may ever be, but you know, it was a phenomenal setting, and very enlightening. And you know, Mr. O'Neill, God rest his soul, all lost. Great man.
We did.
He had a profound impact on my life and my career, you know.
Yeah, and we talked about that, you know, because oddly, you know, you're talking about the audition. What was so funny is that you got the audition and everything was all smooth, and when you came back you weren't sick anymore. And they were all like, they all were like, oh no, dude, where's the voice that auditioned, you know? And they got kind of worried, you know, and we're like, okay, this isn't going to work. And so, you know, when you and I got to talk a couple of times, you know, before we got to do the interview, you know, today, one of the things that you were talking about was Paul, and, you know, and the fact that now here's, you know, and for those of you who've tuned in, you know, I'm talking to Guy Lemonnier. If you've done, you know, you've been doing, you know, kind of, you know, beating the street, you've been doing the stuff as far as with theater, you've been doing, you know, the little gigs here and there, and here you land with this opportunity, and you work with, you know, with an incredible man. When you say impact, how did that impact?
Well, I was a small fish in a very pond, you know, and it was funny to recap what you were just saying, because I did go in there singing like Joe Cocker that night. And I get to the first rehearsal, and I come out there, you know, and they're like, oh, whoa.
Who are you?
Here's some Who albums. Listen to these Who albums, all right? We need to sing like this. So the profound effect was I've always been cornered in that theater sound, and it's what I am, and we all often have a hard time accepting what we are. We want to be something else always, and the grass is always greener. It made me stretch my boundaries in a big, huge way.
Good.
In order to accommodate the gig and the situation and what the show was. So from that standpoint, it was invaluable, because since then, you know, things have taken off from there, and I don't have such a clean sound. I'll always have a clean sound, and I'm always going to, you know, sound like Goulet to some extent, but it really made me push the boundaries. It really made me push the boundaries and give them someone who was very pleased with what they saw and what they heard, but wanted more out of me.
I got you.
And so I had to raise the bar, and I had to give them that more. And we spent a lot of time in the studio with Beethoven last night. You know, of course, he had me singing all of Beethoven's material, even though I was quite young for it at the time.
Right.
But the grit that he needed for that role, I didn't have it yet, you know, and I had it for young Beethoven. So the role of the song that I sang on Beethoven's last night was Vienna, and that was the young Beethoven song.
I see.
So I had just enough grit to give him that for the character at that point in his life. But later on, you know, I think he had Mr. Jody Ashford sang Beethoven brilliantly. It was beautiful.
Wow.
But had such a grit to his voice that I could never hope to accomplish at that point in time.
So, wow. So
he pushed my boundaries, you know. He took me out of my comfort zone, as it were.
Well, and obviously he did, you know, because you've done so many, you know, you're able to do so many things, you know, at this point, you know, in the game. You wound up, you know, successfully touring with TSO, you know, for 8 years. You also wound up, you know, really, really kind of, you know, diving into and taking the opportunity and realizing that you had an opportunity to kind of expand and grow, you know, on an instance of some ideas and some thought processes, you know, that you had been working on. You know, you've also... one of the cool things that I appreciate about you is that you, because of your background, you have the ability to embrace, you know, pop, rock, blues, you know, all of it. And you know,
right.
and fortunately enough, sure. You know, and it was not too long ago that I actually got to hang and talk with this particular individual right here on Radio Memphis Around the World. You and Tony Gaynor, you know. Yes. He's a cool dude, man. He's a mastermind. He's always thinking the plan, you know. There's always a plan, and he's had this plan for some time. But you were able to get with the likes of him and stuff, and you actually, you know, kind of had an offshoot. Kings of Christmas was you know, more of a more pop oriented, you know, on that deal. You also had the opportunity, you know, to kind of jump in on the Wizards of Winter, you know, and you know, kind of get realigned on that. And you know, how did you feel about, you know, those transitions?
Well, you know, I've done a bunch of, go back just a hair.
Mm-hmm.
I had done also, in the midst of TSO, I had done Jekyll and Hyde on the road as well.
I didn't realize that. And so, you know, of course, you know, so you were working those productions, you were working, you know, that Broadway deal. And so at the same time, simultaneously?
I actually took a year off from TSO in 2001 so that I could go out and do Jekyll and Hyde on the road. It was the second national tour. I was Jekyll and Hyde, of course. That also, playing dual roles, you know, there was 16 numbers in the show, and half of them were sung in a you know, as an animal.
Oh, wow.
Which also pushed the boundaries of my grit and the dirt that I was always trying to achieve.
I see.
So you can't be a snowflake, as it were, and sing that material. It's just too grinding on the chords.
And
so I learned to do that and did it well. So I did that. I became very good friends with Mr. Frank Wildhorn, composer of that show, who used me in many, many great ways in the studio. I got to sing a lot of his great material, including Dracula the Musical that went to Broadway eventually. I did the original demos for that.
Oh, how cool.
For the role of Dracula. I did a show called Camille Claudel that he did, it had to do with the sculptor Rodin, another beautiful show.
Wow.
So I got to do a lot of work with him. After Dracula moved to Broadway, after that had happened, I decided to take off to L.A.
Okay.
So I wanted to pursue the acting. I've always been attracted to the most realistic form of an art, of any particular art.
Sure.
And realism, for example, I love true crime. You know, I love true crime stories. It's the epitome of realism, and it relates. It's the closest relation to our everyday lives.
Sure.
So I want to pursue my acting, and I wanted to get out there and get into TV and film. That didn't go great.
I was going to say, because you know, you're in New York. You know what I mean?
LA's a big place, man. LA's a jungle.
It is. It's weird. You know what I mean? And it's like, I've been there a couple times. You know, and it's one of those. But you know, being in New York, you're also in the middle of a lot of Mecca. You know what I mean? As far as just, you know,
sure.
What's going on?
At the time, well, there wasn't a lot of TV and film going on in New York at the time.
Ah,
there was like one live, some soap operas. There was talk shows like The View, and there was Law and Order. So there wasn't a whole lot going on like there is now, where New York is blown up as far as TV and film.
It has.
I went out to L.A. I spent a lot of time out there. Went to a lot of auditions. Wasn't quite sure where I was or why I was there. It's a different town entirely. It's a jungle, as I was told. I had no crew out there. I had no people out there. And you really kind of need that in Los Angeles, you know. You need people, because people aren't just excited to bring you into their group there, you know. It's a lot more dog-eat-dog out there in a way.
Wow.
So, make a long story short, I got a call from the guys from Ms. Tommy Faris and Tony Gaynor back in 2011.
Okay.
And they said, hey, man, we're doing this. Writing this out.
I love it. Hey, man.
We talked about it for years. And in a lot of ways, I grew up with Tommy and Tony. I mean, I went out on TSO in 99 was the first year, and I was 20 whatever.
Okay.
So, not a math guy.
Got it.
So yeah, I'm nervous. So I went out there, and they called me back. And so, you know, I said, I got to do this. And I was with my girlfriend at the time. I packed up my car and I headed back east.
Oh, wow.
To make this album with the guys. So we had talked about it for many, many years. You know, we had a lot of time on the coach bus, you know, in the back lounge talking about what we were going to do for us.
Sure.
You know? It's great to be part of a huge entity and be a member of such a giant, magical, you know, roller coaster that TSO is.
Right.
But eventually you want for yourself.
Absolutely.
You want to create for yourselves. So we talked about it for years. They said it was time. Packed the car, got back to the East Coast. That was 2011. And we spent 2 years making that album.
Wow. So, and
labor of love.
Yeah, and the cool thing about the stuff with you know, with you and Tony and everybody kind of got together on, that's ultimately, you know, what I was talking about in terms of pulling in, you know, as far as the other genres and the other ideas. Kings of Christmas is very pop oriented, but it's music that it's not stuck in just Christmas. You know what I mean? It's like you can listen to it, you know, now. And you know, there's a very, very methodical process that goes, you know, behind all of that. You know, you wind up also in the midst of all of that, you know, being, you know, guesting and appearing, you know, with Wizards of Winter, and then, you know, ultimately getting, you know, pulled in on the reins. And it's quite the family that you guys have really kind of rallied around. And because what's beautiful about all of these, you know, all of the people, you know, now that we're kind of, you know, intermingling into this conversation, is that everybody's got projects and everybody's got gigs and everybody's got solo stuff. And but it's almost like when you come home, you know, when you come home for Christmas, or you come home for Thanksgiving, and you come home for dinner, you know what I mean? It's like all of you guys sit at the same table.
And it is a family, and it's a close family. So, you know, it's, we wanted this album, you know, for us, Christmas is not just a happy time.
Right.
There's a lot of things that come up for Christmas. It's a very emotional time for people as well, you know, and, just like people are born and people die at Christmas, the same as we celebrate, you know, it's the same kind of thing. And so we really wanted to do a different take on Christmas insofar as presenting those emotions, you know, and presenting a different side insofar as that Christmas is a time of happiness for some, and it's a time of sadness for some, you know, for different reasons.
Right.
And we really tried to attach that to our message. And, you know, I think we did that.
You did. Yeah, I like the analogy, because you guys used actually 12 ornaments is the way you did it.
Uh-huh.
And presenting, you know, the human condition, you know, and the human emotions and stuff like that. And so there was a lot of, you know, a lot of interaction, a lot of engagement, you know, and, you know, a lot of symbolism, you know, and stuff like that. And that's, that's some masterminds, you know, that are sitting there going, okay, you know, to try to tap in to every little piece, you know, through music, you know, and symbolism and everything else, you know, that took time. That took a lot of time, you know?
Well, it either works or it doesn't. You know, if you're going off on that kind of path, it's either going to work or it's not. And I think it's worked for many. Some, you know, some say that the album's a little dark. You know, it's not so jingle bells as they would like things to be. But then, you know, neither was TSO. TSO wasn't always, you know, bubbles and sunshine either. So we stuck by that. You know, we tried to make it a mix of like Hall & Oates meets Chicago meets Earth, Wind & Fire, you know.
Oh, and, nice.
We had a great time doing it, you know. We had a wonderful time doing it, and it's interesting because it was my first real jaunt into composing and writing.
Wow!
And it was surprisingly successful.
Minus you, being snatched up by the choir director, being in the music programs and stuff, as far as, you know, in school, you know, getting out of college or getting out of high school and stuff. Did you have any further education, in terms of, as far as your entertainment career that you had coming out of school?
I did not. And I had the opportunity. I had an opportunity at Western Michigan University. I had been accepted at various programs for musical theater. And I don't know that I was any more intelligent than anyone else, but I didn't know that it was necessary for me.
Okay.
And I think years down the line, I still feel that way.
I got you.
I think that school is great for networking, and it depends on the school that you go to. But I really kind of feel like, and at the risk of sounding elitist, you either have it or you don't.
No, you're right.
You either have it or you don't, and you either achieve brilliance or you don't, and I think many, many people are capable of it. But as I like to say, brilliance is only brilliance if you write it down. you either capitalize on it or you don't, you either take it somewhere or you don't. And I didn't think I needed it, and I wanted to get to New York badly. So I forewent all of that, the extra schooling, and just got to New York and started auditioning, and it went well.
It did go well. And speaking of, you wind up kind of, crossing over, and you wind up, being able to snatch up some auditions and stuff, and you start showing up on some really cool TV shows. How did that happen? you're talking Gotham and Quantico and stuff, and I was there looking through some of the stuff. I was going, how the hell did you get there? Yeah.
It's a climb. It's a ladder, and you take it one rung at a time. And they're not huge roles that I'm doing on these shows at this point. I hope for them to be in the future. And
sure.
This is how you build this process. But what really, again, like I said, the realism of television and film acting just appeals to me so deeply. I can't even express it. So I feel like music was my beginning, and music may very well be my end, but my heart is in the performance of acting, and especially not just on stage, but in front of the camera. And at the end of the day, it's all emotion, it's all emoting, in different ways and sharpening that blade dependent on the venue.
Right.
But TV auditions, I went out for a year and a half going out for TV roles and, with nothing.
Wow.
With nothing. So, and this is in the last few years. So again, your tenacity comes into play, because when things started firing, So I was able to book 4 co-stars in a matter of 6 weeks, which was phenomenal. I was on Quantico, Broad City, Gotham, and Power. All terrific, terrific sets,
yep.
Great productions, great people. And what really attracts me, especially in my elder years, my pragmatic, I'm like 70 years old.
No, you're not. Stop it.
You become a little more pragmatic, and you love the fact that especially a TV set runs like a business.
Mm-hmm.
Runs like an office.
Yep.
Everyone's there to do a job. There's not so much glamour as you might think there is. And at the end of the day, everybody goes home to their regular lives and comes back the next morning to start that all up again. But it's very professional and very surgical, and I love the surgical aspect of it. And I'm that way in my singing as well.
Well, that makes ultimate sense. And here's the thing, when you're talking about the school of thought of learning, one of the things that I also did appreciate about you is that not only did you spend a lot of time, either in front of the camera or on stage, and someone in the spotlight, you also spent a lot of time, as the production manager, you also spent a lot of time, as a set director. Yeah, I looked. On one or two off-Broadway shows and stuff. And, and there was a lot of thought process behind being able to, build the environment, build the sets, build the scenery and everything out. And, and that was something that you took to, very quickly and very fondly of, too.
Well, look, I'd love to say I just sit at home and wait for the phone calls to come in and I never have to do anything but what I do on stage or what I do in front of the camera. But it's not true. I have to work and struggle and scramble to make ends meet like any artist does. And,
sure.
I hate to keep using the word tenacity, but it's just so crucial in this business. And I know a lot of my colleagues and peers who have fallen out because that's what you do. You get to a point where you you can't take it anymore. It's just how much longer are you willing to hang on? So, you know, right. I refuse to settle into a 9-to-5 or any comfortable position, because it'll sacrifice my goals. It takes away the urgency.
Absolutely. I mean, of course, here's the thing. For somebody like, you know, me and you, at what point did you ever think like 9-to-5 was comfortable? I mean, you know, well, it's like it makes absolutely no sense. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, so you're only going to really work it out and be productive between 9-to-5. What are you talking about? There's like, you know, there's like, you know, another 16 something hours left in the day, you know, that things can happen, you know.
We would have flipped that desk over a long time ago.
Right. Well, exactly. You know, as far as career wise and things like that. I also, you know, one of the things I also, you know, you got a lot from your dad, you know, and your dad taught you life lessons, you know, through a hammer, you know, and nail. I can appreciate that because my old man did the same thing. You know what I mean? So, and, you know, one of the things about, you know, how important was it for you to have, you know, your family and your parents behind everything you had going on?
You know, it's funny. When I left home, you know, things weren't always great with home. You know, parents are very skeptical about their children pursuing any kind of, you know, career path like this. They want security for you. They want you to have something to fall back on. Well,
right.
Just having that thing to fall back on is a death knell. You know, if you've got that thing to fall back on, you're going to fall back on it.
Right.
And so, you know, and relating back to Christmas means a lot for everybody. I had a very great Christmas growing up. But then in my latter years, once I moved to New York City, I spent a lot of Christmases with other people's families and other, you know, to the point where I kind of finally got to a point where I just kind of wanted to be alone on Christmas, you know.
Wow.
I was either out on the road, I was doing TSO, or you know, I was working in some way, shape, or form in a Christmas setting. And, you know, you just, yeah, I didn't have a lot of support.
Right.
I actually had to do this, you know, on my own. And I've had a lot of family, quote unquote, people that are there for me. You know, I'd have to shout out to my sister, Vicky Bender. She got these clips together for you.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Vicky.
I'm like an 8-year-old man when it comes to technology, let me tell you. So,
well, thank you for her.
they've been there for me forever, you know. Like I said, Christmas means something different to each individual.
Absolutely.
And it's not always jingle bells.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Many of us have lost loved ones at Christmas time. Many of us have had tragedies occur. Many people have had pristine Christmases their entire lives. So with the Kings of Christmas album, that was our goal, was to try to bring out that aspect of things, just because we didn't feel it had been done before.
And it was well done. It was very well done. You know,
and
you know, Guy, one of the things that I appreciate, and thank you for sharing that with me, only because what it also does for me and for those that are tuned in, I've talked about, you know, Radio Memphis to you before, and I've talked about around the world and kind of what we do here. Not only do we have a lot of people that love the music and stuff, we've got a lot of artists, you know, a lot of musicians, you know, and a lot of, you know, entertainers and stuff that like to tune in because they want to get food for thought. And you know, when you describe those kinds of moments, one of the things that everybody needs to understand is that, you know, just how hard it is, you know what I mean? And it's one of those things especially when you want to be extremely successful, you know, in this field in what you do, you know what I mean?
Right.
There's stuff
right.
that you come across and the stuff that you come up against, you know?
Well, you start at movie star status, you know, I'm going to be Tom Cruise. I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. And then as the years go on, you become more pragmatic and you start to see how you can actually make your mark. And it's a lot more realistic, you know, and it's, you know, you keep your head down and you keep moving forward and you really try not to think about how hard it is.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that's, you know, I don't know that there's any more complex formula than just keep moving forward.
So young kid comes up. Okay. You know, and they've seen you, you know, dazzle, you know, the audiences and do your thing and, or, you know, come off a set or whatever. And they right. say, hey, I want to do what you're doing. I mean, what are you going to tell these kids, or even not necessarily a kid? It could be just an individual that just all of a sudden has made a life choice and decided that this is it. This is what they want to get into. What are you going to tell them?
Go to school. No,
I knew that was coming. I'm not thinking about it. Yeah.
Honestly, what I would ask, and again, at the risk of this sounding the wrong way, is this what you got to be realistic with yourself, first of all.
Yep.
You have to be real with yourself. You know, we've all got dreams. We've all got fantasies. We all live on these clouds at times, and that's part of life. And dreams are very, very important. But when the rubber meets the road, you have to have the fire and the motivation and the skill to take it where you want to take it.
Hmm.
You know, and that's not to say that everybody that's made it in this world in the entertainment industry is chock full of talent or brimming, you know, talent coming out of their ears.
Right.
But you have to have a very clear vision of what it is that you want to do. And you have to correspond. You've got to correspond with everybody. You know, you've got to get out there. And you know this about me already.
I do.
That I enjoy my time. I easily disappear. I easily fall off the planet.
Yes.
It's probably been my one biggest regret and my one biggest downfall is that I don't maintain contact with people enough. I don't. I'm afraid to knock their door down.
Wow.
You can't be afraid to knock their door down.
No, you can't. No. That's one thing you cannot be afraid of. Not at all.
Got it. So, yeah, you got to do it with savvy. You have to be savvy about it. But you got to kick those doors in. And it's a hard thing to do. Because I don't rely on anybody. I don't need anybody. I got me. I don't need anybody else. And that's not true. It's just not real, you know. So I think if I had to pinpoint one thing that I've done wrong, I would make sure that whoever that kid was, they did that right. And that is light that fire and make sure that fire is always stoked and burning, and then go kick those doors down. And, you know, I think you know what I mean. It's you know, there's no room for fear.
No.
There's just no room for fear. You know,
none at all. None at all.
You have to be very clear, you know, but you also got to be real with yourself. Is this what you're meant to do? You know, if you can't hold a tune in a basket, maybe you're not a singer. Singing isn't for you. You know, maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe you can make something out of it. Or maybe that becomes your gimmick. Maybe that becomes your thing.
Well, sure.
There's always a way around that. But is this actually what you want to do? Because I think hand in hand with dreams is realism.
Hmm.
You know, and keeping it real. So
that's what
I don't know if that answers the question.
It does. No, man, are you kidding? No, that said it straight up. In fact, you know, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, okay, so out of curiosity, you know, have you ever given singing lessons or voice lessons, you know, to anybody?
No.
Why not?
You know, I have
you're like, I don't know.
You know, I'm a performer. Like I almost take pride in the fact that I'm a tool.
Okay, well then, I mean, why you got to be selfish with your tool? I mean, you're one.
I'm a tool for people. No, let me correct that. I love saying that. I've never had the aspirations to be the director.
I got you.
I'm the actor. That's what I want to do.
I got you.
You know, I'm the singer. I don't. Although I think teaching is from God, and I think that no one goes anywhere without it. It just has never been my thing. And there's a couple reasons for that.
Okay.
A, I don't. I honestly don't adequately play an instrument.
Mm.
So what that goes back, and this is why the KOC experience, the Kings of Christmas experience, was so interesting for me. We had this amazing guitar player, Mr. Dave Silva, who passed recently, actually.
Oh.
But Dave's guitar playing would inspire heaven. The man had chord voicings that were just divine. They were out of this world. And he was such a huge part of the inspiration for that album, and for the very first time in my life, although I had done writing in the past, I found that the world was my oyster as far as writing if I had someone like him who was next to me. And I miss him terribly because I've started writing again on my own. I play a little guitar. I play a little bit here and there, but nothing phenomenal. And I've started writing again, and I think about it all the time. I wish I had him back. I swear I could write a blockbuster if I had him.
That's a magical moment when you actually lock in with somebody like that, you know?
And yeah, you know, I think as far as voice lessons, I don't play piano very well. And on a more heady note, I would never think that I was good enough to give somebody else.
Oh, stop. Now, see, that you just totally, like, blew my chances, because, I mean, I was going to try to get some from you. I mean, you totally blew. I'm serious.
You can have whatever you want.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about
it. You ready? Me.
La, 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 la. Look, you know, it's been many years, you know, since it was something I gave up a long time ago. Listening to some of the stuff, it was some of the same background, and I was kind of inspired. And I was like, well, it'd be kind of cool, you know, if he did, because I would consider it. I will say now, one of the things that you made a remark, you know, about being some, you know, of course, this was in the beginning of the conversation. And those of you that tuned in, you know, Guy Lemonnier, I know I'm saying it wrong, but, you know, I love you, man.
Listen, you're not the only fun. All right.
Lemonade. Look, all right.
Lemonade.
You know, in the very beginning, when we were talking at this interview, you know, and you were talking about having that theater voice and song and stuff, and it was something you were almost kind of stuck with. But then after spending some time, you know, with you know, Paul, you know, O'Neill and everybody, you know, and breaking out of those bounds and stuff, and listening to some of your things, you know, I want this. I'm gonna throw a challenge out to you, man. I want you to write, and if you got to get like Tony and everybody to help you with this, man, do what you got to do. Okay. Don't be scared, but you really need to sing like a pop song, a pop love song. And you needs to be about the chick that you were singing it to, that you were trying to get the affection from when the choir director caught you. I've laid it all out for you. I've laid it all out.
That's some great inspiration right there.
So that's,
it's funny how you remember the names of people 20 plus years ago that had a profound effect on you in some way, shape, or form.
Of course.
Her name was Kim Gardner. We never dated. I remember her name like it was yesterday. I can't remember anybody's name from last week, you know, that's an interesting challenge there.
Hey, man, I'm just telling you, because you thought well enough to sing and woo her, you know, that had to have been something.
Well, I'll tell you, I think that an album for me has been long in coming.
Good.
I've always been asked for one. I've never had one, and part of that is, as I said earlier, I've always been pinned in that theater sound, so I've never really known where to take a music career if it wasn't on stage doing theater.
Well,
and I think that I've grown past that a little bit. Like, I could do standards. I could sing Sinatra all day long. Well, maybe not like Sinatra, but you know what I mean? I could sing standards all day long. There's many things I could do, but there's not one thing that I am. So it's in the business, they don't often smile at a multitasker.
Mm-hmm.
Do what it is that you do, at least in my experiences.
That's based upon what you've been kind of working at and are working and geared towards. Now let's remember something, you know, everything is multi-platform these days. Okay. There's multi opportunities these days, you know, there's anything from being able to, you know, have your stuff, you know, on a commercial to, you know, have your stuff like, I don't know, a Hallmark card because, you know, you were singing to the girl. It could be anything from, you know, a movie. It could be, you know, whatever, you know, there's some fantastic opportunities. You know, the biggest thing I think everybody remembers is that, you ever notice, like, right now, everybody who starts social media and stuff, they're on this big thing about, you know, storyline. Here, you know, what's your story today? Mm-hmm. And you know, and they act like it's some kind of like this new thing, right? Man, that is not old. Don't you remember having to tell stories to make anything interesting, you know, and stuff like that? Well, I mean, all of that picks on emotion. It picks on feeling. It picks on, you know, what's the thing that made me twirl my hair, you know?
Right.
Full circle,
they pretend like it's a new idea.
Right. You know, but, you know, it's the same thing as far as, you know, songwriting and singing and stuff. I mean, like I said, me personally, I mean, you know, in listening to you and listening to some of this other stuff you've done, I want a pop love song out of you. That's what I want.
All right.
Sure do.
You've got a love song of mine, right?
How's your life?
Well, Well, yeah, that's a song that I actually wrote solo.
So. Wow, and I have it lined up. And let me tell you something. That's all, ultimately, so all that other stuff I was telling you about, you just really fed it. You fed the machine so I could back up. I listened to, all you did was give me ammo, man, because I listened to that song and, you know, and I'm getting ready to play it for everybody. And I heard it and I was like, man, he could write one of them songs, you know, the kind that makes your hair twirl. Yeah. Yeah. You can. So yeah, you fed the machine.
That's something I wrote on my own. That's something that, you know, I think, Tommy Freese helped me with some of the lyrics on it, but, for the most part, that was my venture into, you know, writing and playing everything on my own. So
wow.
You know, I need to do more of that. And it's high time. I came out with an album of my own. I've been working on that. So,
well, look, you need to do that.
We'll have something.
Do that. And as soon as you get something, we'll meet back in the middle here, you know, and we'll talk about your processes, you know, and everything else.
That sounds phenomenal.
Yeah. I want to, you know, Guy, thank you for taking so much time with me here on the show and Radio
My
Memphis.
Pleasure.
You know, anytime you guys need anything, you know, and you got something coming up, you let me know. You know, if anybody's like trying to follow you, or maybe they want to drop a line to you, or anything like that, is there any way that people can get in contact with you?
Oh yeah, just Google Guy Lemonnier. I'm the only one on there.
Yeah, no doubt. I figured that part out.
I'm the only one on there. I think there's an artist in France with the last name Lemonnier, but I'm pretty easy to find, and I don't really have a special fan page on Facebook or anything like that. I have my own. I'm just you. Part of what I think attracts people to me is I am humble. I'm not. I've never thought. When you ask me if I've ever given voice lessons, the honest answer is I never considered myself good enough to do that for anybody. So, you know, I try to maintain that level of, you know, of humble. And sometimes it's a good thing and sometimes it's a bad thing. Often it's a good thing, you know. People want to work. At the end of the day, it's about relationships, you know. And that's what I have with the Wizards of Winter. These people are the salt of the earth. Literally the salt of the earth as far as I've, you know, the closest thing I've ever come. They're an amazing family. They're wonderful people. Mr. Scott Kelly is absolutely brilliant in songwriting. And that's what attracted me to them in the very first place. Not the TSO music and doing TSO music again, but the fact that around all this TSO music, they have all this brilliant music of their own.
Yes.
And I'm looking at it going, okay, you guys want me to go out with you? Let's do more of your music.
Forget about that.
Let's do your own music. Let's do yours.
Right.
And that's working for them. It's really working for them.
And that's good.
And they have so much more to do and so much more to come out with. And I'm just so happy to be on the ride with them.
Well, we'll definitely be catching up with everybody, you know, before it's all said and done and hanging out. But I tell you what I am going to do is I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play the song that you wrote for Kings of Christmas for everybody right here.
Okay.
How about that? All right. Well, honey, thanks again, you know, for spending some time with us here on Radio Memphis Around the World. You got my number. You got my, you know, email and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those. Don't fall off the face of the earth. OK, we've made a promise that we're going to keep
You're
in touch.
Brilliant. You're too brilliant. It's been an honor, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, honey. Well, listen, I'll let you get back to your afternoon, okay? Maybe we'll get to chat a little bit later on.
Sounds good. I'll be around.
We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, hon. All right. Very, very cool gentleman. And I tell you that, you know, we got to actually talk a little bit more than the normal circumstances, you know, on Radio Memphis Around the World. And I mean, and he's one of those gentlemen that I could talk to the entire time, you know, Guy Lemonnier. And yes, I probably said it wrong again. I want to play this song for you guys. It is Memorial Day weekend. It is a Radio Memphis weekend right here in Radio Memphis Around the World. And yes, I am going to be playing some more Christmas music, but this is a very cool one because this is one that he wrote. It's How's Your Life? And you're hearing it right here only on Radio Memphis.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.